It's your special guest host on CliffCentral.com.
Yes, guys, Mncoba Ngubo speaking here. Welcome back, welcome back. We're still talking hashtag young, wild, and free. We're speaking about anything youth, as you might have figured from last time. But today we're trying to tackle the big elephant in the room. Over the last few weeks, we've had an uproar of what we call the student voice. It sort of reminded me, or it took me back a bit to like what it would have been like in 1976. I was just trying to figure out, as I mean, I'm a person who was born in the 90s, so this is way before my time. But I'm trying to now figure out how this puzzle actually works. We first had what we then knew as UCT, saying roads must fall. And then after that, we had Stellenbosch. They had their own stuff. And then a few weeks ago, we then had Rhodes University again. There was that clip that went viral. So we're speaking about the elephant in the room, social cohesion. We're not approaching it in terms of, there's still racism or there's still this, but we're speaking about the fact that why are we still not dealing with this? Why, 20 years into our democracy, do we still have these issues? Who is not playing their part? Who's not coming up to the plate and who's not delivering? So that's the first element. The second element of the show is speaking on young businesses, like how we usually would. We're speaking to Billy. Who's a guy who's got an investment company. He basically does everything. He calls himself the inventor because he invents and he just does everything. So that will be a bit of time spent with him. And then we speak to a young lady who's been absolutely miraculous. Dumi Marubane, who's, Nelson Mandela Rhodes Scholar. And I mean, if you're looking for a phenomenal story of how you move from point A to point B, even with the challenges that life will pose, this is the lady you need to be listening to. So if I were you, I'd buckle down because this is going to be a bumpy show.
It's your special guest host on CliffCentral.com.
Yes, guys. So we're speaking about the issue or the big elephant in the room, the social cohesion and how we're just not connected with each other for some obscure reason. I've got on the line Uthenjiwe Mswane, who if you're on social network, it was her video that she was on. I think she was on the table. I think she was speaking or shouting at what was perceived as the vice rector of the University of Rhodes. And she basically was unhappy about a lot of things, but the bulk of it was that I think a lecturer or a white student had beaten her up, and then she'd reported this issue through to management, and management had promised to be doing something about it and trying to follow up. But evidently, I think management had not then followed up. So it was a bit of a thing, but I'll let her explain the issue and so we can get a proper background in terms of what happened here. Yes, Tenjiwe?
Hi,
Mncoba. Yes. Do you want to walk the listeners through what happened, and then that culminated with the video that then went viral? Do you want to walk us through that?
Okay. So what had happened the day before we disturbed the council meeting,
all right,
was we had already started occupying the council chambers, and myself and a couple of my friends who are also part of the Black Student Movement were walking around campus and we were singing, protesting. What then happened is a white boy came out of the class and said to me, "I'm making a noise, can I please be quiet?" At which point I ignored him because I was not there for him, and I just ignored him. He then assaulted me. He pushed me against the wall and held me by my neck. And
Jesus.
One of my friends who was there then stopped this man. And one of the lecturers of the class came out and asked what was happening, and we explained it to him, and he just simply took the boy back to the class. And then I then went to the vice chancellor, Dr. Mabuzena, because he had said we must lay all our complaints with him personally.
All right.
Speaking to members of BSM. I went to Dr. Mabuzena the day before and I said, "Dr. Mabuzena, this is what has happened." And they were meant to then check up on who the student was, because I obviously didn't know the name.
All
but
right.
The lecturer who called the student back in should have known the name, and something should have happened.
That makes sense.
Then the next day was the assault by Rhodes University male white men who assaulted me as we were trying to get into postgrad village. So that is what I was speaking about that day.
Okay. All right. All right. Thanks for that. What I need to understand, and the angle that we're trying to get at here, in terms of now everyone is on the same page, is where do you think we're going wrong as a nation? Because I mean, we're 20 years into our democracy, but it would appear that, I mean, in some aspect or in some element or some parts of the country, we're just still very stagnant. Like where are we, and what should we be doing? Well, as per your opinion, in terms of trying to bridge this gap, because I mean, if you look at the fact that I mean, there's people that died for this freedom, and I mean, we always hear about that, and we always hear people say, but you can't say there's still racism if you can speak English and speak English with this accent and this and that. But I think the oppression and the cohesion goes far beyond how you speak and where you're going. So do you just want to walk us through what you think we should be doing at this moment in time to try and find and bridge that gap as young people?
Okay, I think, Mangoba, for me, first and foremost, is that we are free in the sense that we can now engage with white people in our public spaces.
All right.
Privately, this is not the case. Privately, we see this at Stellenbosch, we see it at Rhodes, we see it at GCC, but privately, there's still a huge thing of segregation. I think the problem with South Africa is that we forgave, and I always say this, we forgave people who did not ask for our forgiveness. What happened with the Mandela era is that Mandela Ubabututu
yes.
requested us to forgive and to reconcile, but there was never, the other side never came to meet us halfway. There was nothing that was ever done to heal the pain of being black in this country, in the same manner that nothing is being done today. So not only does this generation carry its own scars of existing in these spaces with now white people privately in these institutions, and having to be called at Gafford, for example, as is happening at Rhodes University, but we also carry the burden and the scars of our parents, who still exist in the concentration camps that we call townships, who still have to wake up very early in the morning at 4 a.m., get on the taxi, like sardines, go to work for the white people, and come back. Not only are they having to do that, but they're still working for imani that they can never, ever even afford to buy a car. This is where we are in South Africa. And as the young people of this generation, we are obviously disgruntled because we are being faced with this thing of being told that we're free and that we have all these opportunities. But essentially, we really still don't. The ground is not level. Equality cannot mean that I'm able to go to school with the white person, and the white person who has gained from whiteness and has gained the benefits of whiteness and apartheid does not actually meet me halfway. And so I think as a country going forward, one, we speak really of decolonization. Personally, I speak more of decolonization than transformation. Because
that's
first, true. We need to decolonize so that we can transform. We are still very colonial in everything. The fact that people want to say congratulations on my accent as if it's an accomplishment. It's just, these things don't come easy. Ikhule mina ekhaya, ubaba esithi sihlala egatini, because this thing is expensive. This thing has come to our parents through a whole lot of strife for us to get these taxes.
Yeah.
The fact that these taxes is what makes me, for example, be able to get a job over somebody who speaks with what we call I'm a comrade accent. These are the issues of this country that we are not decolonized as a people. And I feel personally that the ANC has failed the people of South Africa, because the Freedom Charter that they were celebrating and are so proud of, they have not stuck to. The Freedom Charter spoke of the issue of land, for example.
Yes.
What has happened? It spoke about minerals. We are black people who are wounded. We are deeply, deeply wounded. And what has been happening is that they keep putting plaster on our wound, but they are not actually dealing with how to fill our pain. And so that's what's happening at Rhodes University. That's what's happening at Stellenbosch. That's what's happening at GCT. Black people are actually saying, yeah, we are now tired. Those who benefited need to acknowledge. So it's one thing when white people say they acknowledge their white privilege, but are they willing to give up that privilege? Because give up that privilege means to say, actually, umhlaba kuwonawami. You know. Exactly. Because I can't understand. We realize what has happened. But what are you doing about it? We're tired of lip service. We're the generation that's tired of lip service. And I, for one, for me, transformation at Rhodes University would be that entire council, the people who assaulted us, to be suspended effective immediately, pending investigation. We need to see people who look like ourselves. When we go to my institutions like Rhodes, and that is still named, for example, after Rhodes, and we know that Rhodes said he prefers land to Catholics, you know. And that in itself is a wound to us. And we go there, and I once wrote a piece where I said, I know all the black lecturers at Rhodes exist because they are so few. More so, I know the black female lecturers personally, because there is all five to seven of them, you know. We need to see abantu who look like us. We need to, for example, people say that they are teachers, but they don't know how to address us in our mother tongue. We still have an issue where lecturers fail students because of grammar.
Oh, guys.
What, your context is important, but no, they're going to fail you on grammar. You need grammar from a student as a look scene.
No,
and, like, explain what he learned from me.
And for me, Tanjiwe, I think more than anything, I was born and bred in KZN. So to a large degree, this whole thing of social cohesion and this whole thing of racism was to me a very foreign thing.
Yeah.
Up until then, I had left. I decided I wanted to study at UFS, and I upped my things and I went through to University of Free State.
I
arrived at the University of Free State, hello, yeah. Mangoba. This is not Durban. But I mean, I had a friend that I'd moved with from Durban who was at Glenwood Boys, and he just happened to be white. We were then separated by res. I went to Kailami, he went to JBM, which is then a predominantly white res, and I was a predominantly black res. Then all of a sudden, to me, everything was like, okay, guys, what is happening here? Now I can't communicate with Yako or whatnot in terms of what we were doing. Whenever I'm asking, when are we chilling? All of a sudden, no, dude, I'm kind of busy. When we meet up, there's a bit of a cold shoulder. So to me, that was then like, okay, I'm not too sure what is actually happening here. But where we're trying to steer this conversation here today is, how can we as the youth, like, because this is a show that is centered around the youth and is for the youth. What do we do? How do we ensure that this legacy, because I said it in my last show, we need to pick a battle. We haven't picked a battle as the youth. We're just happy to be flowing, and we'll just be the generation that came and died, and that's it. How do we go about saying this is how we've picked this battle and how we're actually going to fight it?
My mother, you asked me a very tough question, and I don't know if I have the solution. But I'm a very radical. I'm. They say I'm on the radical list.
Yeah, no. I've come to realize you're very, very radical.
My motto is very simple. My motto is revolution of death. Slavery happened, it did not evolve. Colonialism happened, it did not evolve. Apartheid happened, it did not evolve. I am of the mind that revolution is happening. What that means, I cannot say to people. But for me, my African nation says the master's tool can never be used to dismantle the master's tool. So I do not have the tools, but I do know that dismantling needs to happen. So I believe this generation that has started with Rose McCall, Open Stellenbosch, the Black Youth Movement, transformative, we are in the business of dismantling.
And I
want to urge people to dismantle with us, because we cannot build on something that is flawed. How we dismantle is something that we can now then begin to engage. But for me, we need to dismantle so that we can rebuild. And my dismantling means, if it means Rose and Lurie need to come to speaking house so that the same Yimswane can say, I demand to exist, then Rose and Lurie must come to speaking house, because I am a human being and I need to exist. And I cannot still be seen the way that I was trained in 2015, and as people saw in that video. Like, I need to exist. And so for me, by fire, by force, by any means necessary, I am a reader of the non, by any means necessary, a revolt is where I'm going.
No, thank you very, very much, Lukuza Sisi. And I really hope that going on, moving on forward, because I'm hoping to have a series of conversations through all my shows, in terms of how do we, by, even if it's by end of next year, then how do we look back and say we've grown? So thank you very much for your input, and enjoy your trip. I mean, I understand you're on the road, and that's why you couldn't be here in the studio with us. But thank you very, very much for taking out the time. And we shall be in touch, because we need to hear more on this conversation. And we don't need to hear one side of it. We actually need to start getting in other people and getting in all sides of the story. So we understand when people are referring to white privilege, do they know what they're referring to? And are we speaking about the same thing? Because they might know what they're speaking to based on their definition. We might know what we're speaking about based on our definition. How do we then merge these definitions to speak the same thing? Thank you very, very much, Sisi. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you very, very much, Mangoba. And I will stay in touch.
All right. No, thank you very
much. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
I'm the future of South Africa. On my shoulders, I carry the hopes and dreams of generations to come. I'm eager to learn, but even more eager to use my knowledge for good.
I know that it's not where I come from, but where I'm going to that really matters.
At Sibanye Gold, we believe our youth is worth its weight in gold, which is why we are so committed to developing, nurturing, and grooming our young people into future leaders. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
It's your special guest host on CliffCentral.com.
Guys, if you're looking at interacting with us, I'm seeing a lot of tweets coming through. We're on Twitter, it's at CliffCentral.com. We're on Facebook, it's Cliff Central. We're on WeChat ID, Cliff Central again. And our number is 0861-555-189. That's 0861-555-189. So rounding up this conversation we've just had with Utenjiwe, right before we move on to our next guest, we've now decided that 1976 is now almost being relived into 2015. Some might say you're blowing it out of proportion. Some might say it's spot on the head. But this for me feels like it's a revolution that's beginning. And if we don't pay enough attention through to it, this will be a revolution that will actually just bring everything to a standstill in this country. Right now, we're moving on to speaking to what we call then the young inventor. This guy Billy, I had the opportunity of studying through with him in Bloom when we were up in Bloom. He was always driven, always a guy that was completely driven. I think at some point him and I were trying to do to do 2 or 3 degrees all at once because we were trying to merge all the subjects so we had enough majors and stuff like that. And naturally I didn't go on with that pretty much, but I think he did. So he's into business. He's got investments. He does portfolio management. But what I need him to speak to us about here today is how do you as a young person deal with all the challenges that are there? How do you deal with being in business? Because I mean, I'm in business, and I mean, I think half my family doesn't even understand what it is that I do. Half my family is always trying, and this comes from a very good place, Shame. They're always trying to say, don't you want to find a stable job? Don't you want to, all these things. And I think to myself, these people don't understand the passion, because if you have the passion, you can't suppress it by saying, just because it's been a bad month or a bad 2 or 3 months, now I'm going to let it go. It doesn't quite work like that. You need to keep pushing, because at some point some door will open. So this is the guy that I'm hoping is going to communicate with all of us in terms of even with the challenges. How do you persevere through it? So Billy, are you on the line?
Yeah, I've been on the line. How are you doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Sorry about that. So do you want to walk the listeners through what it is that you do, how it is that you've gotten there, and yeah. Then we'll take it from there.
Basically, I don't know. I like to call myself as a serial entrepreneur.
All right.
But I'm also into investments. I'm an investor. So I started investing when I was in high school, basically. I got to be introduced to investments while I was grade 11. There used to be the JC Investment Challenge.
So oh, yes, I remember that. I remember that.
Yeah. I think we both did that, me and you.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're in varsity. So, yeah, that's where the love for me for investments came in, and then started to put in money into it. And then turning that into a business whereby I can actually, because what I do now, I look for investment quotes for the students. So I'm kind of like pushing the young people to get into the investment world, start, you know, thinking differently when it comes to the entire thing of investment.
All right.
So that's basically what I do. And, you know, I used to do modeling and stuff like that. So I'm into the business of modeling as well.
All right.
Yeah, the other side of modeling as well, like creating shows and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's what I can say I do on a daily basis.
All right. So in terms of young people, How, yes. What would you say to us in terms of business? Because I was trying to explain as you were on the line. Being in business, akukho lula. People will assume, maybe last month I had a good month. But maybe the month before and the month before that, it was an awful month. And, at some point you were asking some of your family members through to help you. How would you convince the youth that all those challenges are part of life? Like, don't then, because you're hitting an obstacle, then decide, you know what, I'm not built for this. Even though some of your family members might not understand what it is that you do. What would you say to the youth in terms of keep going? Because I mean Bill Gates, I'm sure his family wasn't happy when he decided to drop out of Harvard or whatever where he dropped out of. But because he had the passion for it, he had to keep going. Even though his family might have not understood, he had to keep going. Look at him today. If you look at the Facebook guy, Mark Zuckerberg, I think it is. He dropped out. I'm sure his family wasn't saying, listen, guy, you've not gotten into Harvard or wherever it is. You will finish this. But they had to support. I just think, I don't want to say black parents, but let's say parents in South Africa in general, just don't understand that philosophy as yet, because they're looking at, go get a stable job. Even if you're earning 1,000 rand a month, but that's stable, rather than you 1 month having lots of money, then the other month not having anything. What would you say? How would you advise us?
You know what? You are right. It's not easy. You know, I mean, we grew up in a society whereby you've been told, you know, get great marks, go to varsity, and then get a stable job, and then you'll be set for life. The moment when you're trying to, like, say, I'm going to start my own business now, I want to do something different, what I love, then parents start to, you know, question that, you know, and then the thing of support, and it becomes an issue. But what I can say is you need to grow a thick skin. I mean, a thick skin, like, seriously. It's not an easy road. It's a very lonely road. Sometimes you even question yourself. I mean, you question yourself, what am I doing? You know, there are those moments whereby, you know what, I can just drop this and go find a job, the salary and what's or not. But, you know, it boils down to why you started it, you know, and the dream that you had, what you're trying to build, the legacy. So we see year in, year out, young people coming into business. And then, you know, when it gets tough, then they get out.
Yeah, they sort of bum out.
They sort of bum out and stuff like that. So, and it also comes to the thing of mentorship. I think, you know, you need to surround yourself with people that, you know, already been doing business for years, you know, people that are, you know, they've been doing that. You know, that's where you can get advice and stuff like that, whereby you can grow as well, man. And look at the bright side of it. I mean, you know, I love business. This year I decided to go back to business school, you know, to learn more. Yeah. As much, because, you know, passion can take you so much further, but then there's still some other
You need to have something that's backing you up, and that's very, very important. I think Billy, I'm gonna hijack you now because we didn't discuss this earlier, but I think you and I, in the process of all the companies that we are doing and the stuff that we will be doing together, this is now a challenge, and this is also a challenge to anyone who's listening who's in business. By next year June, I would like us to have opened up a fund that will look at educating and mentoring people who are in business, people who are struggling. So we'll open up a bit of like a cluster, like a conversation. And I'll try and rope in a few of my clients as well and see what we can do. But this is now a challenge to anyone who's listening. We all need to take part in ensuring that we groom these people, because I get so angry when people are saying unemployment is so high. Our government is not doing enough. Government shouldn't be your first point of employment. The private sector is there to actually do that. So at the point when you're deciding that government is not doing enough because we can't get jobs, if you're looking for a job in government, my friend, then I'm sorry, you're heading in the wrong direction, because you should be feeding the GDP, not that you should be taking out of it. So this is now a challenge, Billy. You, myself, a few other people will get together by June next year. Let's not say by December, by June next year. We would have gotten together and we'll all come through here and we'll launch a fund that will be looking after people who are in business, who've got all these things, and try and see what we can do. Is that okay, Billy?
I love the initiative of mentorship. And, you know, I think most people, because most people have great ideas, but when you kind of like boil it down into a business plan, that's where the challenge comes in. I think it will help. I'm into it. And, you know, we need to start doing something instead of, you know, I'm all for action and stuff like that. So it is a great initiative, my brother. Right. And I'm already thinking of other people that I know.
That we can rope in. Yes, you bring your friends. I bring my friends. Duncan will bring his friends. And we'll make a big friend party and see what we can do.
This is what we need, you know, every day. You know, we need to engage each other on such issues. How do we bring about solutions instead of looking into the government to bring the solutions to, especially to young people? Because we are another the future. But
that's true. That's true. So thank you very, very much, Billy. In one minute, as you sum up, in 1 minute, what are you up to next? What are the big projects that you're doing? And where can people catch you in 1 minute before you round up?
In 1 minute, we are busy with the first time ever Fashion Week Hang At Home.
All right.
That's the biggest project that I'm working on right now. People can catch me on Twitter at Billy Tanjari. And on Facebook, it's Fashion Week Mangaung. So it's going to be happening next week during that crazy time of Mangaung Cultural Festival. And so, yeah, they really, really, really don't want to miss that. It's coming and it's going to be great. If you're into fashion, modeling industry, that is the event that's going to be spectacular, the biggest time ever in the Free State. So, yeah, that's what I'm working on. Thank you so much, Mangaung.
All right. No, thank you very, very much. Enjoy the rest of your day, Billy.
Will do, man.
All right.
Just wake me. Yeah, cool.
All right. No, thanks, bud.
Unreal. Uncensored. Unradio. Clipcentral.com.
All right, guys. I'm getting a lot of questions about the new Cliff Central app. I'm getting a lot of how do you download the podcast? Okay, guys, it's pretty easy. I think it was a few weeks back that the app came out. You can go into www.cliffcentral.com and you can either download the app via there or you can download the app via your Play Store, your Google Store, your App Store, whatever app store that you have, you can get it on there and it's virtually free. So you don't need to pay for anything. It's just downloading the app. And once you've downloaded the app, it's much easier to try and download and listen in on all the podcasts because you'll see that we've now sorted it by the DJ. We've also sorted it by the day. And each podcast is then has its own link. So each podcast then has its own page. So it's easy if you'd like to only download this podcast, you don't need to then download the rest of the Monday. So it's very, very easy. And I'd urge you guys to try and go through and familiarize yourself with the app because it's made my life a whole lot easier. And I'm sure it'll make your life easier as well. Next on the line, we've got, our next guest or our last guest for the show today. Utumelo. Utumelo is, she's, like I said earlier, a phenomenal young woman. And I say this with such an open heart because, knowing where she comes from, she's born in Botswana. She's just spending a heck of a lot of time now in South Africa. but she'll tell you her story. Maybe let me not get into it a lot, but she's a Nelson Mandela Road scholar. And I'd like to just communicate with her in terms of what it's like being a woman. A young woman nowadays in terms of all these programs that are there. And do we have enough women in there? And what are the challenges that she's facing and what she'd be able to give us? Hi, Dumi.
Hello, Manola.
Hey, how are you doing?
Thank you for the flattery. I'm well, thank you. How are you doing?
No, man, it's excellent. Do you want to walk the listeners through, Dumi, what you do, where you were born and bred, just a bit of a summary and how you got to where you are today.
Okay. I am actually born and bred in Gaborone, like you said.
Yeah.
And I did my primary secondary school in Botswana.
Right.
And in 2007, end of January, I moved to South Africa to go to an exterior science degree. And a week later of arriving in South Africa, I got raped by one of my classmates' older cousins. And that's a story of its own. And then I got institutionalized for post-traumatic stress disorder. And after which I became very depressed. But lucky for me, I had a strong feeling of depression. So I managed to get involved in a lot of charity work. I mean, I worked with you in GovCon, and I even started the post-traumatic student council at the University of East Bay. I managed to complete an imperial degree and an honors. And I'm currently pursuing a master's in imperial science. I was a fellow of the postgraduate school in the University of East Bay. And I got a scholarship at the Mandela Road. So I'm a Mandela Road scholar. I'm actually officially a Mandela Road scholar.
There we go.
And actually, speaking, going back again to the question, I actually then had a relapse again at the beginning of the year, got institutionalized again for depression. And this year has actually basically been the best year of my life, interestingly enough. And I've gotten an appreciation for the remaining year, you know, living with depression and actually doing so-called great things. Yeah, that's my love in a summary. Not forgetting that I got married this year as well.
So, you're a married woman now. I'm a married woman now.
Halala,
halala, halala.
Yes,
thank you very much for that. You touched on areas I didn't think you'd touch on as per our agreement, but it's okay. I'm happy that you did. I'm interested in communicating with our listeners in terms of how being now a Nelson Mandela Rhodes Scholar, how is that transforming your life, and how would you urge young people to take advantage of initiatives of this nature?
You know, when you tell people that your life after being a resident of being a Mandela Rhodes Scholar, I don't think they fully understand what it means. And I don't know if everyone can actually put words to it. It is one of the few most wonderful experiences, one of the best experiences that one could ever have. I literally found the meaning of my life, the meaning of my so-called achievements, the meaning of who I am and my place in the world and how I can make a difference in the world. From this year, I've gained a family of 39 brothers and sisters, and yeah. I don't mean that in a superficial way. I mean, I have literally 39 new brothers and sisters who are just there. It doesn't even matter what you're going through or how much you've achieved. They're there to celebrate with you. They're there to pick you up when you're down. And the whole idea of the Mandela Rhodes Scholarship is to create exceptional leadership in Africa. So there's also a level of intense training of what it means to be leader in Africa right now. And yeah, and what your place is and how you can contribute to that and what it means to uplift the legacy of Nelson Mandela. Yeah. So it's quite a phenomenal experience. There's just no way to have it anymore. Your life literally gets transformed from you get mentors who are there to guide you and help you through it all and lift you up. It's like a cushion, you know, like a cushion that prevents you from falling type of thing, you know, and they're just there to only say, nope, this is just, you know, this is just, you know, stuck down this and you can fly from here on. So yeah, that's Mandela Rhodes Scholarship. So I definitely would encourage people to definitely apply for the scholarship, take advantage of certain opportunities.
Yeah, for them to actually maximize on initiatives of this nature. I think for me, that is more important, because we were speaking to Billy earlier on about what we're going to have now, an initiative that we're going to be running through the show, and we're going to rope in all the business people that we know, no matter how small, how big they are. We're all trying to now facilitate or create a network where we'll be supporting each other, not only each other, but networking and mentoring people that are coming up in the ranks as well. Because what we find is that even though there's a lot of mentorships things that are running around and people are there to help us, but because we're scared of going up and maximizing on those opportunities, we'll lose the hope. And we'll lose the potential that we might have had. So I think to take out of your story as well, is that you need to be able to take in whatever opportunities are available, maximize on that and build on them. Because if you don't, then someone else will. And then you'll be left as that person who says, but this person and that person had all the life in the world. And they did this and they did that. Meanwhile, we were all given the opportunities, but some people just chose not to maximize on them.
That's very true. And that's actually what Mandela wrote is about. It's about creating this network of people who are basically there to help you and guide you and support you and mentor you. So it's exactly that, you know. And the beautiful thing about belonging to this network is that it's not just about people you're in residence with. Now you can actually, everybody who's ever come through this program, who's been a Mandela Rhodes Scholar, who's been a Rhodes Scholar, is actually now part of your network of people to tap into to support you.
Yeah.
So it's a phenomenal, it's really an amazing experience that I think a lot of people could take advantage of.
No, it's cool. As we round up the show, Tumi, because now you've got the privilege of being the last person we're speaking to here today. You touched on the depression part, and I'm interested in tapping into that because we, like a lot of the times, people will assume if you're young, you're in business or you're at school. But if you're young, you can't be suffering from depression. What are you depressed about? Because your parents are paying for this or whatever the issue is, but you're living very comfortably. You've got food. And I never understand that analogy because, I mean, I look back and I think I've had times when I just felt like I can't go on. And it wasn't because I didn't have everything. It wasn't because I didn't have money. It wasn't because I didn't have the support at home. But it was because the support that I had was misplaced. It's because for some odd reason, at that particular time, I'm just going through a vested amount of emotions that whomever's around me is not understanding. So do you want to speak about that, about how to own our depression? You know, I've gone through depression for a bit, and I've only started admitting it in the last few weeks, because I realize it's becoming a daunting thing. And a lot of people might be saying, oh, come on, kid, you can't be saying you're depressed or whatnot. What are you depressed about? And that's what people don't understand.
I would be happy to talk about that.
I think we've got just under 4 minutes to just try and and sum up. How do you own it? Where can you go to try and deal with things like that? Because there are people out there we can speak to, but because we get so shy and we think, oh no, but I can't stay at home, I'm depressed, they're not going to understand this and that. Do you just want to, in 4 minutes, just walk us through?
You know, the one thing that people don't understand is mental illnesses. A lot of people are more comfortable with understanding if your leg is broken or if you have diabetes or if you have high blood pressure, but when there is actually something going on in your brain, they just don't comprehend that. The reality is, depression is actually a mental illness. You are actually sick. It does not mean that it has to be a cause and an effect. It just means that you're sick just so you can get flu. It's like when somebody says to you, when you have flu, and they just say, let's get over it. I have flu. How is that supposed to get over it? You know, it's an actual illness. that a lot of people don't understand what they cannot see. And that's where the problem comes in. You know, and the more people who, because there's so much stigma around mental illnesses, a lot of people are ashamed of what they're feeling because they can't explain why or what is going on with them. I mean, I've had a beautiful year. I got married at the beginning of the year. I got the Mandela Rose Scholarship. I got new friends and family. I've been traveling. So I've had a really, really good year. But understanding that you are actually ill, not that something is wrong with you, you are sick with an illness, just as you can get HIV/AIDS, for example. You are sick. You can't just psych yourself out of it. If you people need to understand that's where the difference is.
All right,
and being ill means you need to get medical attention.
Attention. Yeah. It does not Sorry to cut you. We're running out of time. I'm having now to wrap up, but we will carry on this conversation because it's a very important one. So above everything else we've spoken about today, we've spoken about how the generation of 2015 is trying to then relive the struggles of 1976 with a twist in a new way. We spoke about how we as young people can administer and can try and support each other in business. And now we're wrapping the show up, speaking about the real challenges that face people. I mean, you're a Rhodes Scholar, you've just gotten married, but in the heartbeat of everything, there's still the depression. Thank you very, very much, Dumen. Thank you very much for all the listeners. We'll carry on this. It's a pleasure to me. We'll carry on this conversation a bit later on, but for now, I leave you guys in the wonderful hands of our next host. Thank you very much.
It's your special guest host on CliffCentral.com.